that Osama bin Laden has been killed.
What's going to happen to funding his terrorist network?
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Thanks for checking out the podcast from Marketplace.org. It is Monday, the 2nd of May.
Coming up, the world and the global economy responds to the terrorist killing. In suburban Chicago, the question paper or plastic may get answered for you. And a little later, we're not jumping the shark on how much the toothy fish is worth. No way. All that is ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
There are a lot of questions about what happens to Al-Qaeda now that Osama bin Laden is dead. One of those questions has to do with the funding for the terrorist operation and whether its finances will take a hit. Philip Zelikow was executive director of the 9/11 Commission, which released its report in 2004. He's with us now from his home in Charlottesville, Virginia. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
It's been years since the 9/11 report came out. Did you think we'd see this day?
I actually thought we probably would see this day in the nearly 7 years since we published our report. I knew the United States was going to keep working this problem. Our forces had repeatedly located and killed senior al-Qaeda officials. Over time, there was a good chance that we would eventually catch a break.
In the report, you talk about the continued operations of al-Qaeda. How much does bin Laden's death hamper its future funding?
The organization doesn't need a huge amount of funding. I think the significance is less in their fundraising capability and more in the worldwide symbolic presence of the organization. And bin Laden is an inspirational figure. Both his death and the success of the United States in tracking him down signals that there are other outlets for change in the Arab and Muslim world, and that al-Qaeda increasingly will seem a peripheral organization whose leader is now gone and maybe something that more and more seems like something of the past.
The Obama administration threw a lot of money at this operation. You think that helped?
Well, the main investments we've made is in the creation of these capabilities in the Joint Special Operations Command, and those are large investments. They've been made over a long time. The additional amount of money in order to get that organization to mount this operation, man, it's worth it.
Philip Zelikow is co-author of the 9/11 report. Thank you, sir.
Okay, you're welcome.
And let's get another take now from an expert on terror financing, Bill Tupman. He's at the University of Exeter in the UK. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, if we think of al-Qaeda as a company and bin Laden at the top, how does the death of the chairman of al-Qaeda, if you will, affect the financing of the organization?
You want to think of it as a franchise company rather than a great big pyramidal structure with a CEO at the top. And you really want to think of Osama as the original founder of the company, who's sort of been elevated to a sort of presidential, honorific role. He's not involved in the day-to-day stuff, and you want to think of it as a business that's got lots and lots of self-financing operations going on, although obviously the headquarters operation needs its own stream of funding.
So what happens to the fundraising effort for al-Qaeda with the death of its president, as you say?
To use him as an icon, an advertising image. You want to think of him as a sort of Che Guevara type of figure. You know, you can still sell T-shirts with his face on. The thing that Osama had going for him was all his personal contacts in Saudi Arabia with incredibly rich people. But after he had to run from Tora Bora, all the contacts had to be made by intermediaries, not by him himself. In fact, it appears that one of his couriers was followed, and that's the way in which they identified where he was. So So you've got a network of couriers. They tend to push very hard at Ramadan. Ramadan tends to be the big fundraising time, and of course Ramadan's over. But the fact that, you know, Osama has been dead, the fact that he's a martyr, the fact that he's an icon, means that you can use him in a different way to raise money than the way in which he himself personally visited people to raise money.
Bill Tupman of the University of Exeter, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, what is all of this news about the death of Osama bin Laden doing to global markets? Let's get that story now from Marketplace's Stephen Beard. He's with us from London. Good morning.
Hello, Jeremy.
Well, first of all, tell us about the market reaction we're seeing so far.
Well, the dollar is rejoicing. It's up, and so are European stock markets. Gold, however, is down, and so is oil.
Well, obviously, this news is the kind of thing that we all have an emotional reaction to, Stephen, but why are people reacting with their money?
The thinking seems to be that the world's just become safer and more secure. So investors have pulled their money out of so-called safe havens like gold and put it into what are seen as riskier assets like shares. And the hope is bin Laden's death will lead to less terrorism and tension in the Middle East. That's prompted the fall in oil prices. Also, the general feeling is the US has scored an important victory in the war on terror here, and that has helped lift the dollar.
And a lift in the dollar, perhaps a lift in consumer confidence. Is there a negative side to all of this jubilation that we're seeing in the markets?
Well, yes, according to Robert Cole of the financial website Breaking Views, he says, ironically, this good news for the U.S. government could have an adverse effect on the U.S. government's ability to pay its way, because if the world is a safer place, he says, that could make U.S. government bonds less attractive.
This has been the ultimate safe haven over the last 10 years. If people are getting more adventurous, perhaps money will come out of treasuries, which means that actually it could cost the U.S. government more in interest going forward.
Stephen, I have to say I still have a little bit of skepticism here that that the death of one individual, even if it's Osama bin Laden, could have all of these consequences in global markets.
Indeed, analysts are saying that these market moves today are likely to be fleeting and that it's much too early to assume that the world is a safer place. Indeed, the U.S. State Department has warned of reprisals from al-Qaeda.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard with the business side of the bin Laden story. Thanks so much, Stephen.
Okay, Jeremy.
Osama bin Laden's death gave investors hope for a more stable Middle East. Oil lost a little of its expensive luster, down below $113 a barrel. Chrysler this morning said it made a profit for the first time since exiting bankruptcy, and Dish Network said its profit more than doubled.
The merger between low-cost airlines Southwest and AirTran is expected to be finalized today. The Justice Department says the merger is not likely to reduce competition, but some analysts say the fewer airlines out there, the more expensive tickets will be.
For more numbers, check out which section, Jeremy?
The numbers.
The numbers section at marketplace.org.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
Now to consumer confidence. In Washington last night, you probably saw the scenes at the White House as people celebrated the death of Osama bin Laden. We sent Nancy Marshall-Genzer, our Washington reporter, to ask commuters in D.C. if today's news will cause them to go out and spend instead of saving.
The celebrations in front of the White House were pretty wild last night, with people climbing trees and singing the Star Spangled Banner. But the city is all business this morning. There's a knot of TV reporters and cameras in front of the White House and some onlookers, mostly people headed to work. Mike Blackwell was here last night and came back this morning. Before he moved to Washington, he worked in the World Trade Center in New York. He's had nightmares for years. Today's news gives him confidence to put down roots in Washington.
I always wanted a condo. Yeah, three-bedroom condo.
But most people I talked to were like Matthew Cairns, a New Hampshire attorney in Washington for a conference. He says the euphoria is temporary and won't affect his family's spending.
You know, what affects our spending is how much money I'm making and how much, you know, what bills I have to pay at home and paying for kids to go to college. That's really what I think drives most people in the country rather than what's happening overseas.
Still, Cairns is afraid there might be another terrorist attack to avenge bin Laden's death. He says that fear may cause other people to pull back on spending. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Well, the killing of Osama bin Laden took place in a huge compound just outside the Pakistani capital of Islamabad. Since 9/11, Pakistan has been an ally in the U.S. fight against terrorism and a recipient of billions of dollars in U.S. financial aid. But just how much a role Pakistan played in bin Laden's death is debatable. Dr. Farzana Sheikh is author of the book Making Sense of Pakistan, and she's with us now. Hello.
Hello.
Did our ties with the country of Pakistan help us with this operation?
It's really very difficult to tell. I mean, as you know, we've had very strained relations between the United States and Pakistan in the last few weeks and months. And certainly the Pakistani government has gone out of its way in this morning's statement to say that the capture and killing of Mr. bin Laden was entirely an American operation. I think for the Pakistani authorities, it's extremely difficult in the climate of anti-Pakistani sentiment in the country to claim that it had a decisive role in this latest operation. I suspect, though, that the Pakistani authorities were probably not taken into confidence by the United States because, of course, there is a long history of mistrust between these two apparent allies.
Well, what about the financial relationship between the United States and Pakistan? We've given lots of money to Pakistan over the years in the anti-terrorism effort.
Absolutely. And that money, to the tune of something like $1 billion a year, could now be compromised because I think it's no secret that assistance to Pakistan was predicated on its cooperation in this war with the United States, and with the chief objective of that war having now been achieved, there will certainly be question marks about whether or not Pakistan deserves or merits to receive the kind of assistance that it has received from the United States over these last few years.
Dr. Farzana Sheikh, author of Making Sense of Pakistan. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you.
Well, just in the last week, a couple of places on opposite sides of the country have voted to ban plastic bags at the local supermarket, Santa Clara County here in California and the Village of Southampton in New York. Now, both places are following the lead of the city of San Francisco, which became the first major city to ban plastic bags at stores just 4 years ago. Now it looks like a Chicago suburb wants to take the next step, as Odette Youssef reports from Chicago Public Radio.
Evanston City Council member Colleen Burris wants to cut down on waste, so she introduced a proposal to charge 5 cents for every plastic or paper bag that shoppers pick up at the checkout line.
I consider this ordinance an opening salvo.
That salvo quickly turned into an all-out barrage. Burris and her peers are now thinking of a complete ban on all disposable bags. That's right, plastic and paper.
I think that's a little bit too much. I really do. I think that's taking it too far.
I asked Evanston's lunchtime grocery shoppers what they thought.
I don't know. It sounds like a good idea to me. Maybe start with the cost and then eventually maybe go to the ban.
For the record, both Lee Gaiety and Kristen Alexander brought their own reusable cloth bags with them. Ironically, Evanston's effort to save the environment might actually endanger something else, goodwill toward environmentalists.
Is just going to get people to think that the environmental community is completely out of touch with consumer behavior and ordinary life.
That's Al Hershkowitz with the Natural Resources Defense Council. Hershkowitz thinks bag fees are better. He says they make people conscious of the true cost of their shopping habits. And the fees can be donated to environmental causes, which would lessen the pain of state and federal cuts that many groups now face. In Evanston, Illinois, I'm Odette Youssef for Marketplace.
And finally, Steve, on a day like this, some non-bin Laden news.
Oh,
there are other things going on.
I can't believe
yes,
it.
A study out today from the Australian Institute of Marine Science finds that sharks are far more valuable as a tourist attraction than as a meal. Researchers say that sharks around the island nation of Palau are worth just $10,800 each when they're sold in pieces for food. But if those same sharks are left to swim with the tourists, they are worth $179,000 each. So much higher when you add up all the money that divers spend on airfare, hotels, and dive trips.
But, you know, it is a question of which one is tastier, the people or the shark. Sorry.
You know, I will say a couple of years ago went to the Great Barrier Reef, which, by the way, is unbelievable. And
more jet setting are you there, Jeremy?
More jet setting. And I went on a couple dive trips, and the first time I saw sharks, I like freaked out and swam away.
Yeah.
And then after the first time, all I wanted to do was see the sharks, because I realized that they weren't going to eat me. So it was kind of thrilling to swim.
You do realize, though, that's not the prevailing thought.
They weren't. I think that we were told that they were not killer human eating sharks.
You might want to ask for a refund for that trip,
yeah,
my friend.
Well,
in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chittick.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.